Let's introduce you.
I will call the Joint Special Committee on Economic Development to order. We have a very short meeting here today for the purpose of bill of organization and bill introduction. So our first order of business is adoption of committee rules. Dr. Warner.
Madam Chair, you have the set of committee rules before you. This is a remind you that this is a joint committee, so that anything that's approved by the joint committee will have to have a majority of a membership in each chamber to pass this committee. The rules are standard. They're provided to us by the clerks of the Senate, clerk of the House and secretary of the Senate. So they're standard rules for a joint committee, similar to what you've adopted in this session.
Madam Chair?
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the adoption of the joint special session committee on economic development committee rules as presented to us this morning.
Representative Barnhart has recommended the adoption of the committee rules.
Moved.
It moved the adoption of committee rules. Excuse me. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Okay, now we will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4200.
No, I'm sorry.
And now,
introduction.
We have to do
committee
the
measure
introduction. Yep, there we go. Now we will open. Do you have to have a work session? We will open a work session for the purpose of introduction of committee bills.
Madam Chair.
Chair Berger.
I move LC1 dated 12/11/12 be submitted as a committee bill
to the House.
Okay.
As a committee bill to the House.
Okay. Representative Berger has moved LC1 be introduced as a committee bill to the House. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Anybody have a motion? Another motion?
Do we need a senator?
The senator for LC2.
Madam Chair?
Senator Telfer.
I would move SCR 221, the signing.
LC2.
LC2 as a committee bill to the Senate.
Senator Telfer has moved LC2 be introduced as a committee bill to the Senate. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Now we go into recess. We are now in recess until the call of the chair. About that. We will reconvene the Special Committee on Economic Development, Special Joint Committee on Economic Development, and just to give everybody an idea of what our process is going to be here, we have a number of amendments that folks want to introduce. And so we're going to start this segment of our work with a public hearing where people can testify on the bill itself and can also present any amendments that they want to have considered. Any amendments that are not presented in this phase of the public hearing will not be eligible for consideration when we later convene to go into work session to act on the amendments. So we will start out by opening a public hearing on House Bill 4200. Do we have Representative Smith? You are present here. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jefferson Smith, representing District 47 in the State House. I've just literally received the printed amendments. Before embarrassing myself for the committee, I want to make sure that what I've received bears some semblance to reality and something worth proposing. When you say this phase of the hearing, they need to be proposed, because I can deluge you with stuff, or I can sit in the corner for 7 minutes.
What we will do is we will excuse you. We brought you up here as a courtesy. Excuse you, and we will go to one of our committee members who is prepared to present an amendment.
Thanks very much, Madam Chair.
So, Representative Senator Close, this is your cue for your amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment.
No, it's not time to move
it. Oh, I'm sorry,
we're
not
in
work session.
Explain it.
Yeah. Okay, excuse me. We're concerned about stability and certainty for our, we think that's important for all our businesses that want to grow. Businesses that have assurances of what the future will look like can plan wisely and summon the courage to make strategic investments. These businesses grow, and growing businesses provide families with jobs, generate revenue for state schools, and help create a state where everyone thrives. House Bill 4200, as it stands, is a really good idea, but it can go from a good idea to a great idea with the addition of a little fairness and equality. Every business should have access to the same playing field and the same levels of certainty.
And your amendment is which amendment?
This is the Dash 5 amendment. Based on the principle of equality, this amendment offers the same opportunity for certainty to other Oregon businesses. It removes the high investment and jobs thresholds currently in the bill, so the governor is free to offer businesses of any size the same predictability this bill offers to Nike. In short, this amendment gives more than 1,000 Oregon businesses, both rural and urban, big and small, a fair shot at predictability, growth, and expansion. Giving Oregon businesses this type of predictability will mean greater investment in our state, more good-paying jobs for Oregon families, and a future of prosperity for all. And I urge the committee to support the Dash 5 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Close. Senator Close has introduced the Dash 5 amendment to House Bill 4200, and this will be taken up later when we go into work session. Is Representative Thatcher in the room, or someone who is prepared to talk about the Dash 22 amendment? We'll stand at ease. Okay, we are no longer at ease, committee. We're no longer at ease. We will, while we're waiting for Representative Thatcher, I'm going to have Dr. Warner here go through amendments that have been discussed, that were suggested yesterday and have been discussed, and that we will see later in our work session. And just summarize what those are. And I'll have to tell you, we are working under a tremendously tight deadline, and amendments, two amendments are flying back and forth. So I just ask people who are watching this very closely to bear with us. We are trying to get a product that actually does what we want it to do. Okay. All right. And meanwhile, Representative Thatcher has arrived on the scene, so we will withhold this description until Representative Thatcher gets a chance to present her amendment.
Thank you. Just real quickly, it does three basic things.
Your name for the record.
Oh, sorry. Yes, of course. First time testifying. Representative Kim Thatcher, Kaiser. Does three different things. One, it would allow any company to access the preservation of this right for a period of 6 years. They would pay a fee. They would retain the status quo for 6 years and then be able to renew. They're still, here doing business. And then it would allow for people who wanted to have longer than 6 years to go on this path that your was in LC1 or whatever you're coming up with to amend it. I figured you'd be working on that, so I didn't fiddle around with that. But I wanted to add in the ability for any business to be able to access the opportunity to preserve the same right as what is being proposed, and set up the other track. And the other one was building in some legislative oversight.
Okay. Representative Thatcher has just described the Dash 22 amendment.
Yes, thank you.
Not correct. And we will, as we discussed before, this is a public hearing process, and we will be returning back to this when we come into work session.
All right.
Are there questions from the committee?
We're all reading it for the first time this fall.
Yeah.
Give us a minute.
Representative Thatcher, perhaps you would want to come back when we reconvene.
Sure.
We will be coming back on a schedule that we don't really know yet.
I understand.
If you could have your staff pay close attention to the building TV, that might work.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, now we will move. Oh, you're ready, Representative Smith? Come on up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Jefferson Smith, representing District 47 in the State House, bring to your attention, and thanks very much for all your work. And I want to particularly say thanks to Legislative Council, who did a tremendous amount of work on a large number of amendments in a very short period of time. And I don't know if any of them are watching in Internet land or are here, but hugely appreciate their work. In no particular order, without terrific preparation, let me offer the Dash 41 amendment, which makes a change on page 4. I'll distribute here copies. You need 24. That on page 4, the printed bill, line 1, delete not to exceed, insert equal to. And delete line 6, insert under the tax laws that would apply to the taxpayer but for the qualifying investment contract, or basically for the clawback provision to be strengthened to make sure that any tax savings, if the jobs promise is not satisfied, that the clawback is not just at some amount, but in fact it is equal to the amount of the tax savings. It's Dash 41 amendments. If you want, I can give you all the copies and then... So at least they can be glancing.
Don't tell anyone, but it doesn't need it.
Again, thank you for your patience. That one.
And just so you're aware, Representative Smith, there is another amendment that
might be similar. I've heard that a couple of sharks and dolphins, different people come up with similar answers.
I assume that what you want is the substance of what you're saying.
No, I'm particularly convinced that my verbiage and dash number is the most important thing. So whatever
got it.
Whatever we do, please have it be that. You got what you need? Oh, wait, I took a first page. I might have done that more than once. All right, next, Dash 50 amendments. On page 2 of the printed bill, actually, why don't I skip the sunset, because that also I know is already on your mind. Offering two different sunset amendments, the Dash 42s and Dash 43s. One of the concerns of many of us, including people who testified here, me and Representative Kenny Geyer, who testified yesterday, concerned about the 10-year sunset, proposed two different options. One is the Dash 43s, which is a 2-year sunset. The other is the Dash 42s, which is a 10-month sunset. I've heard rumor that there's also a 1-year sunset that people are considering. I would prefer a year to 2 years, but in case in the final analysis a 10-month sunset becomes interesting, I'd propose that and bring to your attention the Dash 42 amendments. Moving briskly, potentially more controversial, and well, that's maybe controversial. Something I haven't heard talked about enough. Bring to your attention the Dash 50 amendments. On page 2 of the printed bill, line 15, before the period, insert, and that do not result from the termination of employees of the taxpayer in other states or the transfer of employees of the taxpayer from other states to this state. And let me dwell on this just for a moment. That doesn't mean there couldn't be a significant transfer within the state or beyond. but rather that qualifying jobs, the 500 jobs that count in order to get a lock-in of your single sales factor, wouldn't be counted unless they were real jobs produced, as distinct from we're just playing the same national trade-off race to the bottom game where we give a bit, little bit better deal and we hope they don't do it to us. So the only jobs that would count for the lock-in would be actual jobs produced. I hope that the committee will seriously consider the Dash 50 amendments. I know that time is tight, negotiations are challenging, but I hope that we'll consider it. I don't believe this would interrupt the deal that brought this special session to attention. My understanding, and I'm tutored by rumor and media largely, but that the Nike Corporation is planning is in fact a facility that will increase new, brand new jobs, not merely a shift, that might include some transfer, which is great and fine, but that the jobs that qualify are new jobs. That's the Dash 50s. Anybody wants to interrupt at any point? That's fine, but I'm moving briskly because I know there's lots of other people here.
Keep going,
here.
And then we'll Great. Open it for questions.
Next, two different disclosure bills, amendments, one short, one long, the Dash 49s and the Dash 54s. The Dash 54, one of my frustrations is that I am, and I know maybe the Department of Revenue and maybe Legislative Revenue has a slightly better idea, but every member is tutored by rumor and hunchery to figure out how much the single sales factor lock-in agreement is actually worth. We don't know. I think it's worth between $20 and $30 million a biennium. And if they add 7,000 jobs or 500 jobs, that'll go up. But we don't know. And it feels important that we know. I won't read the entirety of the Dash 54s, and hopefully maybe in the next phase of the public hearing, after people have had a chance to maybe at least glance at it, I can testify at greater length if there is at least moderate interest in disclosure. But some disclosure about the benefits seems important. Those are the Dash 54s. A much, much shorter version that does less is the Dash 49s, which just asks that the Oregon Business Development Department adopt reporting requirements, asks for rulemaking these reporting requirements, ensure the collection of all information necessary to allow the department to determine whether the taxpayer has complied with all the requirements relating to the employment of at least 500 more full-time equivalent employees, etc. So all this asks for is for rulemaking by the Business Development Department so we can get the information we need to evaluate this further. I have other amendments that I've set aside. This is the hot list. So just imagine there were several other things not as brilliant as this. And so the dumb stuff is that. This is the cream that I hope you will skim. And that's what I've got for now.
And the committee is grateful for your winnowing process. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any other legislators that I might have missed who have amendments out there? Okay. Paul, now finally you get your turn.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. The chairs of the committee have been working on a set of amendments to build into House Bill 4200. We're still in the process of getting those back from council, but I can quickly summarize those and give a number on them. The first concept, and a number of these have already been discussed in the earlier testimony from other members. The first is a change in the date for when the contract can be executed to 12/14/12. Currently, it's 12/1/12. Change the sunset. That's, by the way, Dash 58, we think. Again, we haven't reviewed these. Change in the sunset date for the governor's authority to 1/1/14 rather than 1/1/23. That would be Dash 59. Remove the title section, which is Section 2. That's Dash 57. Remove depreciation, amortization, and intellectual property from the actual cost definition. That's the Dash 15. Specify the minimum job threshold cannot be satisfied through an acquisition of an existing company's Oregon operations. That's dash 13. We think that may need a change. Adjust the clawback provision that Representative Smith just referred to so that it should be equal to the difference what the taxpayer would pay under a new apportionment formula versus under the single sales factor. These are all part of the breach of contract section and remedies for that, plus interest. So that's the dash. We're not sure with that one. We changed that one, so that will have a different dash to it. There's also a change in the governor's factors section, which is section 4F. Those factors for consideration by the governor. Those are to include duration of jobs, compensation of employees, and other economic development incentives, which was a discussion during the hearing on LC1 with the governor. The rulemaking section, section 6, would be adjusted to require biennial reports from the Business Development Department to the legislature on progress of the signed contracts with specific reference to the jobs requirement of the contract. That's dash 61. Section 5, it would be changed to the governor in consultation with the DOR director and Business Development Department director. That's a dash 27. Right now, it's just the governor and the DOR director entering into the contract. Remove the reference to the strategic investment program participants. That's dash 36. And reduce the maximum length of the contract from 40 years to 30 years. And that's dash 3. So we are still compiling those amendments. And we will be going through those and making sure that those are consistent with what the committee was thinking, and then we will have those for discussion later.
Okay, thank you, Paul. And are there questions of Paul from the committee on this list? Okay. Chair Barnhart.
Thank you. I want to ask about the first two that we discussed, just to make certain I understand what the import of these would be, 58, 59. 58 puts an opening day of today and an ending day of January 1, 2023. And the next one, 59, changes 2023 to 2014. If we adopted both of these amendments, what happens?
Mr. Chair, I think there would need to be, when those were combined, those inconsistencies would have to be taken out. And so you would have to send a clear signal to council what it is that you prefer.
Okay.
For a combined amendment, because yeah. These will all have to be combined at some stage for the A engrossed bill.
I'm just being cautious because it seems like a pretty clumsy way of doing it to have these two, one of which looks like it amends the other.
Mm-hmm. Yes. These amendments that we have all been requested on an individual basis, so... During the combination process, some of those issues are going to come up. We have to make sure that those are fully understood by the committee and we get direction.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? All right. Thank you. We will move on from this phase and get into the public hearing. What do we have here? I don't understand what you're saying.
I apologize, Madam Chair. I had left
come up
the,
on the record.
Length of the deal
come
number on the record. I had it.
For the record, I'm Jeff Smith, District 47 in the State House. It's a pleasure of the committee, or otherwise. One other topic that I neglected to bring up with two options, the dash 39 and dash 40. Another concern, there was a letter signed as of last night by 14 members that was received by hopefully every member of this special committee that identified five areas of concern. One was the sunset length, two was the length of the deal, three was the job quality, four was accountability and clawback, and five was transparency and reporting. When I came back last time, I offered amendments on the sunset, on the clawback and accountability, on transparency, and I know the discussions have been going on about with respect to job quality, making sure the governor at least considers that. One thing I neglected to mention and bring up was with respect to the length of the deal. 40 years is a long time. My impression is that the idea was always going to be 30. The deal's already been signed to be 30. They put 40 in the bill so that there'd be something to negotiate. 30 is still a really long time. 30 years ago, our tax structure, the world, our economy was very, very different. 30 years from now, things are changing even more quickly now. The Dash 39s would change the 40 in line 27 and insert 10. In line 27, dash 40s would do the same thing but make it 15. I hope that the committee will consider a shorter than 40 or 30 year period. 30 is better than 40, but 10 or 15 or even 20 would be much better, and I offer you the 39 and 40, dash 39 and dash 40 amendments with great hope.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So not seeing any other legislators in the group, now we will move on to the public hearing phase on the bill itself, and we will start out with revenue impact statement that Dr. Warner has prepared, which you should have in your materials.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do have a what could be referred to more as a preliminary revenue impact statement, assuming that the bill will be amended to an A version. It's House Bill 4200, and the revenue impact of this is at a very basic level, straightforward, but also it involves some significant tax policy issues that this committee has discussed extensively over the years. And because the House Bill 4200 does not change the apportionment formula for what currently exists. It just provides a guarantee for those that enter the contract that they will get to apportion their interstate revenue based on the sales factor, which is now current law. Therefore, technically, there is no revenue impact from this bill. And the reason for that is that our revenue impacts are the difference between the proposed law and the current law. And, of course, there isn't a difference in this case. So there is none. There is the only time there would be a revenue impact is in at some future point in which a legislature were to change the apportionment formula, say, to one that uses other factors other than sales, and then the state would not be able to collect this additional revenue from those who have signed this contract beyond what would be collected under the single sales apportionment formula. So that's all obviously highly speculative when and definitely if that would occur. One thing we did look at is some of the potential indirect revenue effects from an investment of this size that's in the minimum requirements for the governor to enter negotiations. A contract would be a $150 million investment and 500 or more jobs. And to give you a sense of what that indirect impact would be, 500 jobs at 100,000, which is the testimony you heard for Nike, was the $100,000 average. We would assume an average effective tax rate on $100,000 of 6%. Which would include deductions and personal exemptions and so forth. So that's roughly $30 million per year for that. It would be $500 million in wages. And then the property tax revenue on $150 million in assessed value would be about $2.25 million per year for the taxing districts that would be of which that investment property would be part of. So that would give you a sense for the for the magnitude of those potential indirect effects. And, of course, if this became if this was passed and basically the announcement of this expansion, that will be built into the current law forecast by the state economists to factor those in. One final thing is that we do like to try to include a public a policy purpose for revenue policy measures so that we have something for the historical record to look back on. And at the bottom, I have written up the The policy purpose of this measure is to establish greater certainty regarding state tax policy for those benefiting from a sales factor apportionment formula over other apportionment methods who sign contracts with the state and meet certain conditions. So that's something a committee may want to review, and if you feel that that properly reflects what you see the policy purpose of this, I would appreciate any comments on that.
Questions, comments? Thank you. Okay, we have yesterday, as you know, as an interim committee, we had a public hearing with extensive testimony from a variety of witnesses from around Oregon. And then today we will continue the public hearing process. And we have we have three people signed up, and Senator Boquist is, there he is.
All right.
Senator Boquist, you signed up. So come on up and say your piece.
Thank you, Madam Chair, distinguished members, co-chairs and co-chairs and members. I'll be very brief, just pursuant to the rules that we had. Senator Boquist, Brian Boquist, 12th Senate District. I'll be very brief, but pursuant to the rules that we heard yesterday applies to today. And you have before you, I think, and legislative staff or representative staff received it, the LC5, which basically is, okay, we're here, we all know where we're going, I don't think there's anything in that, and we're saying either now or in the future we need to go there, which is much wider, which gives us a difference. I know that the co-chairs have addressed that there needs to be things either now or in the future, and I know that our own distinguished chair and vice chair have said that there need to be things now or in the future, and so we would be appreciative that LC5 be in the record and that we know what is transpiring. It really does exactly what we said yesterday. It simply expands it. Good for the goose, good for the gander. And it is a discussion of starting point. And with that, I'm going to be quiet because I know the number of LCs sitting out there. Thank you.
And thank you for your brevity and your cogent explanation.
Is that it?
Here's the dash five.
Okay, now everybody gets to see it. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have three people signed up, Mary Thaman, Susan Barrett, and Nicholas Caleb. Come up here. Yep, you're on. And Mary Thaman indicated that she lives more than 100 miles away, so she will testify.
Portland, SB 42. SB. District 42.
Oh, okay. Well, so that way, the three of you can argue on who goes first. Then.
Okay.
Give your name for the record, please.
My name is Mary Thaman from District 42 in Portland. Okay. The way that SB 4200 is being rushed through this legislature on an emergency basis makes me think that this bill is not in the people's best interest. We need time to look into the claims made by Nike, to do research and ask for clarification of said claims. I think about the small businesses who won't have the tax advantages that this bill will give to Nike. I question the number of jobs that Nike says will be created. I personally would like to find out about those 500 or 2,000 or whatever number of salaried jobs that Nike is claiming, and also the $100,000 salary jobs that Nike is dangling before the legislature's faces. This situation doesn't seem to me to be any kind of an emergency. Please, take your time. I read that Intel is upset, as well as many of your constituents. I question the amount of money that will go out of this state, taxpayer money, that won't go to the schools to hire teachers or to the mental health sector to treat people with mental illnesses, the stories of which that are constantly published in Oregon's papers. Think about Clackamas Mall. As a taxpayer in this state, I ask you to slow the process down. Let us look at Nike's claims. We need that the time to do that.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll take all three of the testimony and then open it up for questions. And not too close on the mic because it squeaks.
Is this good?
That's good. Okay. A little farther back.
Okay. For the record, my name is Susan Barrett. And for whatever it's worth, my background is I am a parent with two children in our public schools, and I work in research and development and STEM education. And I cannot speak to any of the particular amendments because I don't even have copies of all of them, right? They ran out of copies. You haven't even had a chance to read all of the amendments yet. And Senator Burdick, when you opened up this session, you mentioned we're on a very tight deadline, and there's a flurry of amendments. So that right there should tell you that this is just not how you make policy. I have heard from people from both parties, you know, regardless of party affiliation, who have said and agreed to the fact that this is not how you make policy. So I should tell you, just don't do it. You cannot do this in such a rushed manner. And this is just not an emergency. Okay, Nike has already had the opportunity to grow, right? We heard that story yesterday, how they grew from this small company. And they did that without a certainty in place. Growing, expanding a business, that is something that is just part of doing business. Any kid with a lemonade stand can tell you that if they want to grow their lemonade stand and their profits from their lemonade stand, they're going to have to get more lemons and so forth, and they know that's the cost of doing business, okay? And businesses don't have to have this certainty. It doesn't not have to be locked in place. It is just not an emergency. You need time to deliberate this, time to weigh all the research, all the guarantees, to hear from more of the public, to hear from other businesses, small and large, to hear from rural Oregon, urban Oregon. So you need to hear from everyone on this. This is just not time for any kind of thoughtful debate. It's not how you make policy. Yesterday I spoke to the fact that...
up a little bit.
So thank you. Yesterday I spoke to the fact that Nike has actually been instrumental in calling for more accountability from our public schools, that they're requiring, you know, that my kids show evidence of growth in exchange for our tax dollars, right? They're focusing on these outcomes-based budgeting. So where is that same accountability, same evidence of growth for Nike for getting this deal? Okay? And where is, and to even lock this in, 5 years, 40 years, I mean, 40 years is absolutely unconscionable. I mean, our future legislators during that time wouldn't have even been born yet. You know, our citizens of Oregon are going to be locked into this deal. And even if it's shorter, even if you put a sunset date on it, that's, you know, 5 years, 2 years, what have you, the people that the people elect need to be able to make these decisions. We put you all in place to be our representatives for our voice. We should have the opportunity to talk with you about this, to hear our voices, and this is not going to happen if you lock this in place. You speak to the revenue impact. Sorry, I was scribbling notes so quickly. You mentioned something about $30 million. I'm just going to speak to education because I follow that a great deal, care about it a great deal. You know, we're $3 billion short on the quality education model and being able to meet that. And you mentioned this might give us $30 million. You know what? If this were really so good for our public services and for our public schools with all the growth that Nike has said they've had since 2007, why is it that in their hometown, in Beaverton, the average class size right now is 60 students? Okay? How is this benefiting Oregon? So you really need time to debate this, think this over, and you need to push this to the regular session. If you do nothing else today, you just say no to it right now. Move it to the regular session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Is this okay for volume?
Yes.
All right. My name is Nicholas Caleb. I am a professor of government at Concordia University in Portland. I am also the de facto speaker for what we're calling the Emergency Coalition Against Austerity, which is a bunch of people that have gotten together over the last week to express disagreement with the way that the process has been done. Susan's also a part of it. It's a very loose coalition of people that's mostly individuals and organizations that haven't had the time to actually issue their own organizational statements. So lots of folks within the education community, for example, that haven't had the time to talk about this because nobody knew what was going on until it was presented to the public. To give you an idea of how fast the opposition to this is spreading, the Working Families Party issued a petition yesterday on a tax issue that's, you know, creates attention to tax issues in the public. 1,200 people have signed it in one day, are demanding that this process be slowed down and moved to the other side. Just as an aside, I should say that the amount of anger that I've been exposed to so far from the anti-democratic way that this has been done is pretty substantial, and probably, at least for a lot of people that, you know, are leaving government this term, that won't matter to them. But the people that still have electoral responsibilities, this is going to be something that people look for in the future, and is a very strong benchmark for what this next legislative session will be. I've got a few comments that are sort of all over the board. The first thing is that when we're accepting a horrid premise for making public policy, the premise that is guiding the decision-making here is that the confidence of investors is the most important thing that we could possibly consider. Okay? It's important, but you know, public policy is far more than the economic good of small silos. Even the amendment that was introduced, the close amendment that extends this policy to all people, that's better, right? But it's still taking away the policy choices for tax policy away from the legislature for up to 40 years. That's crazy. I lived in India for a while, and I worked on international policy with relation to intellectual property and also trade agreements. To me, this looks a lot like the same stuff that happens in so-called third world countries, where people come in, corporations sort of dictate policy where they get what are called special economic zones, which are exceptions to the rules of sovereignty of nations. They get pieces of geography that basically have no rules or regulations on them. They're exceptions to the general rules. And of course, companies like Nike actually flock to these places and build factories that have horrid, horrid human rights treatment, bad labor protections. They don't pay people very well. This is, to me, seems like sort of an opening shot in what we've all accepted is this global economy where, well, we've got jobs as our primary goal, and people will threaten us to leave if we don't give them what they want, and the only thing that we should look after are immediate jobs, and if we can't do that, then we can't do anything. It's a very poor premise, and it pushes us on this race to the bottom where once we start it, we're never going to be able to say no ever again. So, for example, what happens if this gets pushed through? Kitzhaber makes a deal with Nike. They begin construction on a manufacturing facility of some kind, and then Nike says, you know what? We're having trouble building our facility because the environmental standards are too high. And we're thinking about moving some of our other operations out of Oregon now, where you're going to give us some environmental exceptions right now. And what's going to happen? Are we going to enact another special session to give them? Is that going to be the time that we say, no, we're not going to let single corporations dictate state policy? Or what, do we just go down that road forever? It seems to me that this is opening a very, very bad precedent. It relegates what I would like to see of my representative government to basically nothing. It's an intermediary between short-term, very specific, individualized economic returns and public policy. And if that's where we go, what is the function of government? Like, what is it useful for anymore? It's just an intermediary between the need to assuage the confidence of very few people. So, obviously, I'm expressing some opposition to this. I think, like Susan said, that the best thing to do for the state and also for folks that are going to be looking for re-election at some time soon is to slow this down, debate it, add a lot more public policy, add a lot more hearings, give these 1,200 people and more the opportunity to come into this place and express what they think government should be doing. And that's all I have for it.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? All right. Thank you. That completes our sign-up list for the hearing, and so we will recess the... Oh, we've got one more sign-up. Nancy Newell.
Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Newell. I live in Portland for 40 years. I was one of the first women to become a motion picture operator. I'm a member of the IATSE, International Alliance of Theatrical and Stage Employees. I've worked on all kinds of issues, free trade agreement issues, all kinds of different organizations. And this is very similar to my experience on NAFTA when that was first introduced. And congressional people, it was placed on their desk, a 5,000-page document to come up with answers in a very short period of time. Well, this is the same process. I also was part of an effort by our school district, which is now in so much danger. I honor what this woman said about crowded classrooms, closure of schools, kids being transported all over the place to find a school. The situation is really drastic. We should be looking at how we're going to have a future in the state of Oregon for our children and grandchildren if we don't have decent schools for them. And now we have a tax policy that's 40 years where they won't even have a decision. That doesn't make any sense. I'd like to read a statement from an associate of mine. But the experience I had was that Nike participated in the promotion of supporting schools, not with funding, but with advertising, so that when all these parents, there were about 20,000 parents that marched across the bridge over the river to downtown, to illustrate how much support there was in the community for healthy schools. And Nike insisted they gave old T-shirts that sat in school gyms for many years to get a free advertisement all over the country and all over the world that Nike supports schools.
If you could confine your comments to the bill, that would
be helpful. Well, it is the bill because you're benefiting Nike. You're assuming that you're benefiting the community. I'll tell you, I wouldn't trust Nike, I'm benefiting our community. I'm giving you a personal experience. They gained free advertising, and nothing ensued that was a benefit to the school district except policies like these that reduce the very basic support for our schools. And we're in dire straits right now. So I just have to pull this up because I didn't have time. This is such a quick thing, and I am in full employment, so I had to make a special trip down here. But this is my testimony support for opposing the committee going forward with this on their own. Now, just give me a second here, I'll get it.
If you want to have somebody from the committee print it out, we can make that a part of the record.
Sure. It's not very long. It's maybe a minute. Sorry about the way. I thought I had it up, but I guess not. I haven't done this in a while, so I'm a little nervous.
If it's going to take a little bit, we have one more witness signed up.
Okay.
And we could take
them. It's just, here, I've got it. So, ending single sales factor tax loophole hires 825 teachers plus care providers equals better stimulus than mythical Nike employees. Jobs doing what we need versus jobs producing nothing we need in Oregon. We've got plenty of issues. We need teaching and care. Please count the jobs you get from closing the single sales factor tax loophole, $165 million this biennium, estimated by Oregon Council on Public Policy, up from $130 million last biennium. At 100,000 jobs a year or 200,000 jobs a year over the biennium, that's 825 jobs we need most, teachers and care providers. So it goes on, and I will file the testimony. I don't want to take too much of your time today. I know you're very busy, but I think this is very important to make note of. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. And you just submit it, and you can get help with printing if you need
thank
to.
You.
Okay, Russ Dondero.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, and members of the Joint Committee. My name is Russ Dondero, D-O-N-D-E-R-O. I live in Forest Grove, Oregon. Many of you know me because I'm a familiar to this building on lobbying on housing issues, on homelessness issues, and I'm now a member of a Washington County group called WECAN, Western and Washington County Citizens Action Network. And I didn't come down to testify, I came to listen and learn. But I must say, as a political science, now retired political science professor, who has students in this room, ex-students in this room, who are probably for this bill, I'm very concerned about the process. It seems to me that in Oregon we pride ourselves on open meetings. We pride ourselves on a legislative process that is friendly to people from around the state and to their testimony, a deliberative process. We obviously want jobs. We want the economy to get better. But it seems to me anybody in this room who's watched Oregon as I have since 1974 and brought students to this legislature and lobbied this legislature since 91, that one of the problems we have as a legislative body and as a state is the law of unintended consequences. And it seems to me there are so many questions surrounding this particular bill with unintended consequences stretching out 5 to 40 years, it boggles the mind. It seems to me if this bill is a good bill, if this bill is a job-creating bill, if the promises implied in this bill from the governor, from Nike, et cetera, and the advocates are as genuine and adequate, then there's time to deliberate, to look into that, and to see, as Norma Paulus used to see, say, as Secretary of State, to find where the bodies are buried. So I urge you to take a deep breath, to counsel caution, and to look at this bill and this process in the way we would normally look at it in a regular legislative session with all due deliberate speed. This is not due deliberate speed. This is a fast track to somewhere we don't know. And on that basis alone, I would oppose this bill on procedural basis. Forget about the goodies that are implied. Procedure, this is not the way a legislature works, and you all know it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We have one more signed up. We're going to start time limits here. We're getting a little short on time. So actually, everyone's been really good about being brief here. So I encourage that to continue. We'll have Alan
Beals.
Beals. Okay. Say your name for the record, please.
Alan Beals. You know, with all due respect, Senator Burdick, council people, I'm a member. I live here in Kaiser. You know, you just heard a science, political science professor just state a lot of wisdom. And, you know, let me back up first and say one thing. I have a degree in business. I can start businesses in this state, but you know what? Half the time, if people feel like I feel, why should I start a business in this state? Because Nike, who they say they have the best shoes, yeah, they have the best marketing. I bought Nike shoes in eighth grade for basketball. I don't buy Nike shoes. I was an athlete. I won the athletic award in eighth grade in my school. But I buy other shoes. You know what? I'm not going to buy shoes from Nike for a long time just because of the premise that they set up. They come here saying, oh, we need all this money. Okay. We need all this. Fast-tracking stuff is not the way to go. The premise is faulty. When I was in college, we learned about premises and categorical syllogisms and thinking through things. And I have heard so many straw man arguments. I listened to this attorney the other day. I listened to this representative of Nike, and they need all this stuff. Did they ever talk about, you know, the little guy starting a business in the garage like Bill Gates did? Did they ever talk about that? No. Is Intel very happy with them? Doesn't sound like it. I don't care what part of the political spectrum we're on. This rushing that we need all this money to keep things going, It doesn't even pass the full test of just common sense. I urge you to think this through. This is not an emergency. This could go into regular session. If you do this, your names are on the line in Oregon. Okay, I'm telling you, your names are on the line. Your integrity is on the line. Our integrity as Oregon citizens is on the line. And I honestly don't agree with the total premise. You just heard a guy who's a U of O attorney tell you about it. and we're repeating history. This reminds me of, he was telling me a little bit earlier about the progressive area. If we go back in the 1830s and 40s, the railroads and other businesses says, well, we need these breaks. Okay, it was all done on the table. Are we repeating history? Are we repeating history? I ask you to think about history. High school, it said, on my library in high school, it said, those who forget history are condemned to repeat it. We can slow this process down. If we do pass something, I'll argue the other side. If we do pass something, we need to make sure that small business is protected. And it is true. I'm a former custodian of Salem-Keizer Public Schools. I have seen problems with too many people in classrooms. I have seen a lot of this, and it is true. If we bring down our numbers, we can do it. The way to do that is to treat business well. If we treat business well, all business, then we'll be able to do better. The mental health issues are a concern as well. We need to look at those issues. I won't go into that side of it because I have issues. I can talk about that too, but let's think this through, okay? I like Nike, but I don't like when they come and force us to do something. We are a deliberative body. We need to think about that, and we need to think about all of Oregon. And, again, let's get back to thinking about our Oregon Constitution, thinking about our U.S. Constitution. We don't just, and not picking on Nike, let's pick on, I've done some small business work, okay? I don't come to you and say, I need X amount of dollars. What I do is I go down and invest it. Right now I have enough cash on hand that I don't need to ask for money. So what I do is I build it. That's how businesses were built in this country. Here's an analogy for us to think about.
If you could wrap this up.
I will wrap it up real in about 1 minute. Let's pick a company. Johnson & Johnson, when they started, did they come to whatever state they're in, I believe they're back in the Middle West, and say, well, Illinois or wherever they're at, we need this amount of certainty on taxes before we can move. You know what that's called? That's called, like, it's almost a subtle threat. No, I'll bet they didn't do that. You know what? They took private money. They built their business, and they built their business, and they built their businesses, and we see where they are today. They're successful. We can't treat one business different than another. We need to be on an equal playing field. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Now we will go into recess again, and Paul, should we set a time, or should we? Senator House, did you want to say something?
I do. I just want to make a comment about the people who've come forward today and opposed this initiative, and just to say that I know it's not easy to get up here and sit at that table. I know I've been here 12 years, and I get nervous when I have to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I admire you not only coming up and talking to an audience of 8 state legislators and do that. It's nerve-wracking. I suspect some of the Nike people were a little bit nervous, too, when they came up there. And I very much appreciate you doing that, and I appreciate the civility in which you did it. That, to me, feels like democracy. I didn't agree with a lot of what you said. I agreed with some of it. And, you know, we're going to vote on these individual amendments. It's going to be shaded by, I think, some of the participation that you all had. And so I just, to those of you who got up and spoke up, it was good. It was courageous. It feels like Oregon, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. And I echo that as well. Thank you all for coming. And I know some of you had to leave important commitments to do it, so appreciate it. Okay, should we set a time? 12:30. We will be in recess until 1 o'clock. Yes, we'll be in recess till 1 o'clock. We'll do that after the amendment.
Yeah,
that's right. You're
going to
pay it.
We will reconvene the Joint Special Committee on Economic Development, and we will open a work session on House Bill 4200. Paul.
Madam Chair, the committee has before you the Dash 69 amendments, which we are making available to everyone. You also have a summary sheet, and I thought what I would do is go through that with you. These are the amendments you were discussing earlier, and just refer where those are. And I'll alert Dexter and Kate and ask them to come down, so if there are any questions regarding the drafting, that they will be able to answer those. If you look on your sheet, the amendment concepts are laid out there. And the first one is to change the first date for when the contract can be executed. Keep in mind, all of these are amendments that we had earlier discussed, and now they're combined into this one. So it changes that contract date to 12/14/12. And if you look on page 3, section 7 of your Dash 69, you can see that that date has been changed to December 14th. And also you'll notice the next one, which changes the sunset date for the governor's authority, that moves that sunset date to January 1, 2014. As you recall, the initial draft, 4200, was 2023. So those two are there right at the end of section 7. The third one on your list is remove depreciation, amortization, intellectual property from the actual cost definition. And you can see that on page 1. If you look on line 7, gives the actual cost. It just restates that actual cost without those three components that were in the original 4200. The next one on the list is specify the minimum job threshold cannot be satisfied through acquisition of an existing Oregon company. That should be on page 2, line 20. And you can see the language there. I think you had originally had an amendment that didn't have Oregon, so this one does make that adjustment so it specifies that it's a taxpayer by another entity's existing Oregon employees. So that... that is that amendment. Page 2, line 20.
Mm-hmm.
So line 20 just has the whole statement about acquisition. You can't meet the qualifications. Another Oregon company can't purchase an existing Oregon company and meet the qualifications if they, unless that's a net increase in employment. The next one is to change the remedy for when there's a breach in the contract. The only change here from the original bill is that the original bill said up to the amount equal between the calculation of the single sales factor versus some new apportionment formula that would come into play. This just says it's equal to that. So you can see that on line 30, the very last line on page 2, it deletes the not to exceed, and then it inserts the equal to replace that. The next conceptual element of the combined amendments are a change in the governor's factors for consideration when entering contract negotiations. That's in 4F, the original bill. And if you look on the top of page 2, you can see the changes there. A couple of things that were added was in terms of wages. There was some new language with compensation. The most substantive change there is on line 4 on page 2 is other economic development incentives. If you recall, this was, Madam Chair, you spoke with the governor about that issue. That language is directed at that discussion. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, there was some reference in there to the governor considering the cost of existing investments. That language was removed. The next conceptual part of the amendment is an addition to rulemaking, and that's on page 3, line 8. And that's the section about the Business Development Department. And what that does is require the Business Development Department to report biennially to the Legislative Assembly. And then it goes on and specifies that the Business Oregon should include whether each taxpayer subject to a qualifying investment contract has complied with the investment requirement under Section 3.4. So that's a they'll have to give a report to the Assembly, and specifically that report will have to contain that addressing the issue about the employment requirement and whether it's been maintained. The next issue was around contract authority. For the original House Bill 4200 had the contract authorities, joint contract authority, the governor and the director of the Department of Revenue. The new language here, it appears a couple of times on page 1 and also on page 2, but on line 17 on page 1, now the governor has the sole responsibility for entering a contract on the part of the state. But then we've the amendment adds the language in consultation with the director of the Department of Business Development. And also, you can't see in the amendment, but Department of Revenue has changed from a co-contractor to in consultation with. So the governor would be in consultation with those two departments when entering a contract or negotiating a contract.
Thank you.
The last two, there was a reference to a certain level of property tax relief under the Strategic Investment Program. And that language was removed. There were three lines there. And if you look on page 1, line 15, it says delete lines 9 through 12. That's deleting that reference to the Strategic Investment Program. So that's pulled out on the first page there. And finally, there you had quite a bit of discussion about the length of the contract. This amendment changes the length, maximum length of the contract from 40 years to 30 years, and you can see that on page 2, line 25 of the amendment, deletes 40 and inserts 30 for the maximum length of the contract.
Okay, we've heard the Dash 69 amendment described. Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, I thought we were going to take a motion from Representative Berger.
I thought we would go through the amendments one by one. Did you want to go through them all and then take motions?
There's only three.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
You're ready for a motion on 69? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we could do it that way, or we could have all the amendments described and then go through them. Let's just have the motion, and then we'll dispense with this one and then take up the other ones.
I wanted to take up mine first.
Yeah. Oh, you wanted yours before
That's what I thought we were going to do.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. I misunderstood that. I thought it was, yes. Okay. All right. We have this amendment before us. We've heard other amendments described during the public hearing. And now at this time, I will recognize Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, we were presented this morning with the Dash 22 amendment by Representative Thatcher. I would like to move the Dash 22 amendment to House Bill 4200 at this time.
Okay. Representative Berger has moved the Dash 22 amendment to House Bill 4200. Is there any discussion?
My motion. I will be brief. I think that Representative Thatcher adequately described the concept here. It is to broaden the base of this provision of allowing the single sales factor tax to be available to all businesses within the state through a mechanism, and in essence, by way of a contractual arrangement, a somewhat different mechanism, but I think the point is well taken. It is to allow this to be, instead of being a special carve-out for a very special company, it would be generally available for all, and that is the thrust of her motion, and that's why I'm moving it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. We'll have a roll call vote on this.
Senator Hatch?
No.
Senator Close?
Aye.
Vice Chair Reed?
No.
The Vice Chair Bench?
Aye.
The Vice Chair Telfer?
Aye.
Chair Berger?
Aye.
Chair Barnhart?
No.
And Chair Burdick?
No. The motion has failed. I recognize Senator Close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 4200. Very briefly, it just gives the governor...
Senator Close has moved the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 4200. Senator Close, to your motion.
To the motion. Pardon me. Generally, this is a short amendment. It just says that the governor and the director of the Department of Revenue shall negotiate the minimum dollar amount and the stated time period with the taxpayer. Same with the minimum number of full-time equivalent employees. This would remove the threshold and give the discretion to the governor, director of Department of Revenue. And I assume that would include, we would merge that with the amendments that were passed.
Discussion on the amendment. Okay. If there's no discussion, we will have a roll call vote.
Okay, Senator Haas.
No.
Senator Close.
Aye.
Oh, Vice Chair Reed.
No.
Oh, Vice Chair Bent.
Aye.
Oh, Vice Chair Telfer.
Aye.
Co-Chair Berger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barnhart.
No.
And Co-Chair Burdick.
No. The motion has failed. Now, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 69 amendments to House Bill 4200.
Representative Barnhart has moved the Dash 69 amendments into House Bill 4200. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment, as has already been described, is a amalgamation of a whole lot of different issues that are designed to make this bill function better and more expeditiously, and allow us allow the 13th session to consider the issue in a broader context later.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the Dash 69 amendment? Okay. We'll have a roll call vote.
Senator Haas.
Yes.
Senator Close.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Reed.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Bent.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Telfer.
Aye.
Co-Chair Berger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barnhart.
Aye.
And Co-Chair Burdick.
Aye. The amendment has passed. Representative Berger. After the motion.
Okay. I move... Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4200 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger has moved House Bill 4200 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Out of an abundance of caution, I think I need to declare a conflict of interest.
Your conflict will be, please state your conflict.
My wife is employed by Nike.
Okay, your conflict will be noted for the record. Is there any other discussion?
Yes.
Representative Berger.
I will be brief in the interest of time, Madam Chair, but I think that as indicated by the amendments here, there are some of us who not only value Nike, but we value all businesses. We would like to have assurance to all businesses in the state that they are welcome here, that the jobs that they bring to our workforce are the critical piece. The folks who have come before this committee and been sincere, we have been listening. But as an income tax state, all the services that we provide in the state are provided by employers making a paycheck, because income tax is what really pays the bills here. So our employers are incredibly important to us, every one of them. And I just wanted on the record that that's what motivates me to be here. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Telfer.
I just want to make a comment regarding a comment that Representative Barnhart said about addressing the broader scope of this type of legislation in the session. I think what we've done here today is responsible legislation where we've taken a critical issue that is very time sensitive and addressed it and fixed it, I think, you know, addressed it to the point where we're all satisfied without trying to overwork this and broaden the scope of this. But the recognition from this body that discussion will take place during the regular session when there is time to fully vet the issue and come up with some really good legislation so that all businesses in the state of Oregon can have certainty in their tax futures.
Further discussion. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the governor said it very well in his remarks yesterday when he talked about this being a procedure that, I don't remember the exact language, but a procedure that is unusual, at least. He said it in stronger words than that. I think that when we write a bill like this and we try to do it to deal with an exigent circumstance that we're faced on short notice, it's really important to follow the thrust that I think that Senator Telfer has expressed several times, that we write the thing as narrowly as we reasonably can, as carefully as we can, given the circumstances and the time that we have. There are many methods that we use in Oregon to try to attract businesses, large and small, to try to encourage development in our cities and our rural areas. I happen to represent cities and rural areas, and I'm interested in both. And as I looked at this bill, and I presented a number of amendments that we did not adopt, that was attempting to pull in the edges of this thing even more in order to deal with things that we didn't have time to actually fully think through. We've been in this process in the revenue committees that we're all on in the past, and realized that getting these kinds of bills right is very difficult in the first instance, even when you have a lot of time to actually work them and think them through and figure out what the different possibilities are. And we've had bills that we have worked on, or topics that we worked on for several sessions in a row before we got them into the shape that we thought actually worked for the state. And therefore, the point of these Dash 69 amendments is to pull this thing in, not because we're trying to avoid helping smaller businesses, because the smaller businesses where our jobs come from, but because we're trying to avoid trying to help out a business that needs a plan now, but at the same time making a mistake that leads to a problem for Oregon as a whole. I think overall this is a good bill that will accomplish both of those goals. I'm hoping that the 13th session will look at this mechanism much more carefully than we've had time to look at it, and will make an appropriate decision about whether or not to extend it or broaden it for future use. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? I just want to add, this has been an intense process, and I want to thank the members of this committee for being diligent, for being focused, and for being very clear-headed as we've worked our way through this bill and the many amendments. And I particularly want to thank our LRO staff, Dr. Warner here and his team of cohorts over there. Raise your hands, please, who have worked extremely hard on this. And again, they were mentioned earlier, but we cannot say enough about Legislative Council and their hard work on this. I think there were many, many sleepless nights involved in Legislative Council last night. So with that, I think we have a good, solid product here. I think we have a wonderful, wonderful company that's going to be remaining in Oregon in a big way.
because of what we're doing here today. So I want to commend all involved for their hard, hard work on this. So with that, we have a motion before us to pass House Bill 4200 as amended to the floor, and we will have a roll call vote.
Senator Close.
Votes aye.
Senator Haas.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Reed.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Bennett.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Telfer.
Aye.
Co-Chair Berger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barnhart.
Aye.
And Co-Chair Burdick.
Aye. The bill has passed unanimously. And carrying this bill on the House floor will be Representatives Barnhart and Berger, and I will carry it on the Senate floor. And we're not done yet because we have a very important matter. I will open the world's shortest hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 21.
221.
Dr. Warner.
There's no revenue impact from this.
at this point, this is our favorite bill. I will close the public hearing because I presume nobody wants to testify on Senate Concurrent Resolution 221, and I will open a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 221. Dr. Warner.
Madam Chair, you have SCR 221 before you.
And this is the signee die resolution, in case you haven't figured it out. So, do I have a motion?
The senator has to make it.
Oh, senator, you have to make it.
I would move adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 221 as of today, dated today.
Senator Telfer has moved adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 221. Is there any discussion?
I assume you want to move it to the floor as well.
Oh, move it to the floor with a due pass record.
That's true. We'll move it to the floor.
Yeah, I'm anxious to get out of here.
It's the concurrent resolution part that threw me off here. So we'll move it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? No objection. So ordered. Good work, committee. I'll go take a nap until we get this done.
Are we adjourned? Or?
We are adjourned.
Recess.
Take it back. We're recessed.
Recessed. We don't know.
You never know.
Yeah. You never know. It's like some glitch.